With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Thank you, Juan. Welcome back, Grant and Danny. On 106.7 The Fan, always appreciate you guys listening. We know you got options, means a ton. If you want to be a part of the show, Danny, I know that you know that people can tweet. Why don't you tell them how they can do that?
Well, you can tweet me at Funny Danny. If you want to get Grant Paulson, there's an important extra step you've got to take. There's an H sandwich right in between the Grant and the P of Olson. So Grant H. Paulson on the Twitterverse.
You can also call us at any point, 800-636-1067. On the lines, which is what we go to right now to kick off our Beltway Blitz on the Mattress Warehouse Hotline, covering a couple teams in town in one segment. We start you off on the gridiron. We'll talk football with Michael Phillips of the Richmond Times-Dispatch. Michael, update people on what is actually going on in Ashburn right now, because I feel like this is the weirdest training camp for people to get content of all time. Is there actual football happening yet?
Not yet. They are out there on the field doing workouts. If you count a quarterback throwing a pass to a receiver or calling a play walkthrough style, there is football, but there's not full speed football. There is not helmets or pads or anything like that. They're still in what we're calling the acclimation period. First day we get to go out there and watch is next week. That's, I guess, what you would call the formal opening of camp will be late next week. That's when we'll get our first glimpse of what's going on the field, when the coaches will get their first glimpse of the whole team together, and when hopefully we have a little more information to pass along to you, because, yeah, it's been a weird offseason.
Alex Smith, question mark, what do we know?
He's back. He's with the team. He is participating in these. I just would caution there is a big difference between participating in a workout and being ready to play full contact professional football. I don't know that he's going to get to that point this year. I do know what he's done so far is nothing short of amazing. I mean, truly one of the great comebacks of all time. He's my comeback player of the year this year if he doesn't play a snap. He, of course, wants to push this as far as it'll go, see if he can get back out there. I still think 2021 is much more reasonable, but the fact that he's around the team, that he's doing all this, just incredible.
Yeah, it is crazy. Speaking of incredible, Adrian Peterson, his last two seasons at his age have been unreal. We're going to talk about his chances to catch Emmitt Smith, something that came up on NFL Network with him this morning coming up at 12:18. What kind of role do you foresee for him this year? Will he be able to hold off Geis, Love, and the rest of that backfield?
I think he's kind of your default option. So, you know, you're waiting for somebody to pop. You're waiting for Geis to show you what he's got, show you the durability. I think if Geis is 100% and ready to go and has the burst, then he's your guy. You know, that's the future he brings that extra dimension to the offense. If Bryce Love comes back and he's ready to roll and he can catch passes out of the backfield, get in space, be everything Scott Turner's going to want him to be, he's your option. But neither of those are sure things. Neither of those guys are necessarily even going to contribute this year, you know, just based on their past and based on the position. So having an Adrian Peterson there, he'll get several games of very good run here. I have no doubts about that.
non-slot receiver, non-McLaurin division, who has the most catches between Dontrell Inman, Antonio Gandy-Golden, or someone else I haven't even thought of yet?
I think Gandy-Golden's probably your early favorite. Just he's a big target. He can bring a lot of stuff in. I think him working out with Haskins this offseason is going to end up being a very big positive. I feel bad even talking about this casually, Danny, but he's had the coronavirus, and he's back out there. He's playing. He's full strength. So you would say his availability is going to be very good this year. I understand that's a very callous thing to say, but that's going to be a factor in this crazy season. He's going to be available for all 16 games for you. I think Haskins really likes him. They've got a nice rapport. I think people are going to be really impressed by how he catches the ball. I don't think he's going to be a McLaurin-style breakout guy, but I think he gives them an option, and they would settle for an option right now, and that's what he is.
Of the two guys that did opt out, Josh Harvey-Clemens and Caleb Brantley, will either be missed more than the other? Were one or both going to make the team? How did you see that?
I saw both making the team on coming off the bench basis. I would say Harvey-Clemens just because that position is so much in flux. Thomas Davis is going to anchor that inside linebacker core, but it's wide open there beyond that. It's wide open in a lot of places on the defense. But not the defensive line, and that's where Caleb Brantley was. So he certainly would have been waiting for his playing time if it had come. Whereas I think at that linebacker position, anybody who shows up and really pops here in this three-week stretch could potentially find themselves on a field in a professional football game.
Will we see Reuben Foster play for the Washington football team?
What a great big million-dollar question right there. Even the coaches are hesitant to weigh in on that right now. His position coach is hesitant to weigh in on that right now, and we have not talked to Reuben Foster yet. So a lot of uncertainty surrounding that. He's doing the rehab. It sounds like he's not going to be full go, at least out of the gate in practices. But, man, what a difference maker. If you can get him back, that'd be a huge boost to really the entire unit. Even up front, those guys can do a lot more with a guy like Reuben Foster behind them.
Thank you much, Michael. We appreciate you, buddy, and hopefully we'll see you soon.
Absolutely.
Let's talk baseball. 6:05, first pitch, Nats Orioles tonight right here on 106.7 The Fan. They've got a weekend series through Sunday before they are in New York for their first road game of the season against the Mets on Monday. Charlie Slows will be on the call with Dave Jagler, pregame at about 5:35 this evening. So, Charlie, why don't we start with this pitching matchup, Tommy Malone for the Birds. Tell me who's going for the Nats and give us an idea moving forward of what this rotation looks like with and without Scherzer next time through.
Well, Anibal Sanchez will pitch tonight. He's had a long layoff, and then it's going to be Austin Voth tomorrow, and then they have not announced a starter for Sunday. Could be Patrick Corbin. It would be his normal fifth-day rest. He did throw 102 pitches in five innings plus on Tuesday, so if they opt to give him an extra day, then we could see Eric Fetty possibly start on Sunday with a combination of bullpen arms since he came on a relief for Max on Wednesday. So it would be a little bit of short rest for him. We wait on Max. Yesterday, of course, would be his day to run after he pitches. Today would be his throw day. We don't know if any of that's happening. He, of course, has played it down thinking that he wouldn't miss a start. But that may not all be up to him when it comes down to the medical people helping to make decisions as well. And Strasburg probably has to throw a full, complete bullpen before they clear him to go. And if he does that today or tomorrow, then that probably pushes him maybe into the Mets series. So maybe we don't have Max this weekend. Maybe we have Max and Stras in New York for that four-game series. Maybe we have one of the two.
Charlie, Nationals 28th in baseball in runs scored per game. How did they generate more offense?
Well, yeah, part of that is, the games that they missed, three games behind in terms of against what the other teams have played. So that factors into it somewhat. But, yeah, they're hitting just .199 against right-handed pitching, which if that's what you face most of the time. While in 58 at-bats, 24 hits against lefties, that's a .414 average with four home runs, and they have four home runs against the righties. So in a limited amount of at-bats against left-handed pitching, they have crushed left-handed pitching. So hopefully that's a good sign because Tommy Malone pitching for the Orioles tonight, former National, is left-handed.
I just can't get past the fact that Tommy Malone not only is pitching in the big leagues right now, but how about was the opening day starter for the Birds? I mean, the rivalry feels a little bit different than it typically would, only because you got the COVID and it's kind of the weird schedule where you were going to play the Orioles more anyway, so you got these games. Then you're at Camden Yards coming up in August. It's lost luster without the fans, obviously, but, Charlie, this is always one of the more fun series of the year for the Nats, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it's been in Washington because, you know, as the years have gone on and the Orioles have gone into the rebuilding mode, the series draws much better in Washington for both Nationals and Orioles fans, while the crowds for these series have declined considerably when the Nats have played in Baltimore, which is just, you know, the follows in line with the fact that Orioles attendance period has dropped so much in recent years. Certainly, you know, when if you hit a time when both teams are contending, and that was briefly the case a few years back, it's much more exciting. But the Orioles are, you know, clearly in a rebuild mode in this second year managing for Brandon Hyde after losing 108 games last year. So, you know, they're a very young team. They're coming off losing four straight games to the Marlins in Baltimore. Two of them were the Marlins were the home team. So they're struggling mightily offensively as well.
Charlie, non-Sean Doolittle and Will Harris, who's now on the shelf division, this bullpen has been excellent for the Nationals. Hudson, Rainey, Javi Guerra, Ryan Harper, Sam Freeman, all been really, really good. How confident are we that this is kind of the reality this year for this weird sprint? Because I think bullpens are going to be huge before starting pitchers really get stretched out. This Nats bullpen, by and large, has been really good.
Yeah, I mean, that's why they're staying at 28-man rosters, really, because one of the reasons is for the pitching and the amount of injuries that there has been to pitching, and that falls in line with going to seven-inning games in the doubleheaders and, you know, all the things they've done with the runner on second and extra innings to try and prevent long games, putting a further strain on pitching staff. So the fact that other guys have gotten out of the gate very well for them helps for the Nationals, with Will Harris out with a groin strain. He's eligible to come off the injured list during this series. We don't know yet if he will. And for Doolittle, you know, this is a work in progress for him to try and build back up, hopefully to gain the velocity in the mid-90s that makes him much more effective. We haven't seen anything really close to that yet, and he's a much different pitcher throwing 89 to 91 than, say, 94 to 96 with that fastball up in the zone. So certainly been a struggle for him. But Rainey, you know, when we first saw him come up last year, guys, you know, you didn't know what you're going to get when he came in. He might strike out three in a row. He might walk three in a row. I mean, now you've seen him come in with men on base and get big outs. You know, he's not throwing quite as hard last year when his average fastball was 98 miles an hour. He's averaging more like 95 and maybe a few ticks down in velocity, while still as ferocious for him coming out of the pen. He's had much better command of the fastball, and we know if the slider's near the plate, it's a wipeout breaking ball.
Charlie, you know what would be the wackiest thing that could ever happen in 2020? If the 6-1 Marlins won the East somehow.
Don't bet the ranch, Bruce. Don't bet the ranch.
I don't plan on betting the ranch, but it would make for the perfect 2020 storyline.
The most 2020.
Where nothing makes sense. Hey, Charlie, thank you, buddy. We appreciate you.
You got it.
See you, my friend.
And I give them almost no chance to win the division, for the record. There's a ton of baseball still to be played, even in this sprint. But the fact that they're 6-1 right now, Danny, is outrageous.
It's also very annoying, just, again, given that they cost the Nationals a weekend, they cost the Phillies a bunch of games, and them being irresponsible, whatever you want to call it, was sort of the epicenter. They're now held up as the example of what not to do, and yet there they are at 6-1. They will come back down to earth, but they're 6-1. It is kind of amazing that the Marlins are in first place in August.
Grant and Danny on the Fan. Does Adrian Peterson want to chase down Emmitt Smith as the all-time leading rusher in the NFL? He was asked that on NFL Network today. You'll hear his answer next. Grant and Danny on 106.7 The Fan. Our Richmond audience with us now as of noon every day. Very, very cool to be on in Richmond. You know what we need to do, Danny? Every summer we used to go to Richmond and eat something delicious. We have not been to Richmond this summer because we're not going for training camp. We got to go down there and eat something. By the way, Thom, this is an all-timer. Danny's still not back, so there better be a good story here. He's just now sitting down. He's putting on his headphones.
I'm here.
Danny, that one wasn't even close.
Sorry.
What was that?
Meltdown. Kid, upstairs.
I mean, that was a long break.
I know.
Literally not even close.
I was hoping
that's
I had
like
time.
A you forgot the radio show was going on kind of situation.
No. That was you can say I'm out of breath. I finally got him to let go of me. But, you know, my wife's on a call, and he's losing his mind, and he's ticked off. And so he did the cling to me thing, and I'm trying to hand him to her. And she's like, don't hand him to me. I'm on a call. And I'm like, I'm on the radio. What are we going to do? Impasse, silent argument. Got him off. He's freaking out on the floor, throwing a tantrum. Probably hit
nice.
His head. But
well,
that's where we are.
Back.
That's where we are. Friday.
I was telling our Richmond audience that joined us at noon that because we normally are down there for a few days in training camp, we eat at ZBQ and all of our favorite spots. You and I need to make a little hike down there at some point and be socially distant and maybe get some barbecue. At least get some ribs and some brisket from ZZQ.
And you remember that we tried to go to ZZQ, and they were out of food that day. Still as disappointed as I've ever been in my life. That day, when we went to ZZQ, when we were at training camp down in Richmond, and it was like closed out of food or something, whatever it was, that was a gut punch, man. I've been looking forward to that for the entire calendar year since I'd last eaten there. And it was like the whole point of going to Richmond in 115-degree weather and the whole nine yards, man. That was miserable. That was a really sad time.
I made the clutch move of going back the next day, though, before I came home. So I actually did get my ribs, my barbecue, my brisket, which was good to tide me over. All right, let's get to Adrian Peterson on NFL Network. This is this morning. He was on Good Morning Football. They were asking him about Emmitt Smith as the all-time leading rusher. He wants to potentially become number one on that list, right? This is what he had to say.
There's one number, and it's 4,139. That's how many yards separates you and Emmitt Smith, the all-time rushing leader. You've talked about this a little bit, Adrian, but that number, becoming the GOAT all-time, passing Emmitt, is that something you want? And how do you feel about hanging around as long as it takes to get that?
You know, that's not really my ultimate goal. You know, it's one of my top goals. You know, winning a championship is the one that I'm chasing the most. You know, but, you know, obviously that's one of my goals that I set for myself, you know, when I enter into the NFL was to be able to, you know, pass the goal. So my body is feeling good. You know, I look forward to playing, you know, a couple more years, 3 to 4 more years. Who knows? Depending on how my body is feeling, because, you know, it talks to me, you know. So, you know, I didn't know it was that close, you know, 4,000. That sounds a lot better than 6,000 or, you know, 5,000. So, you know, we'll see what happens. I'll put my best foot forward to reach it. I promise you that.
So a few things. I don't believe him that he didn't know he was that close. Do you? I have to imagine. Adrian Peterson, he's had a long offseason to
pretty
look
good
up
any
numbers he wanted to.
Yeah.
When you're within 4,000 yards of the all-time leading rusher Emmitt Smith at 35 and you're prolonging your career year after year, I think you probably know how far off you are from being the number one guy in rushing.
You have a general idea, you would think. And that's despite basically 2014, 2016, and 2017. 3 years out of four. In 2015, he had a really good season in Minnesota. But you got suspension and then sort of persona non grata. You had injury. Pretty amazing, man, when you go back and look at what could have been. He might have already done it. Or been close to it, but knocking on the door this year if you don't have those seasons. If he's the feature back in those 3 years where he only played, I think, 8 or 9 games kind of combined over the course of 3-plus seasons, he'd be really, really close right now just given his still ability to churn out yards. But I wonder how close he'll ultimately end up.
Now, let's talk about the actual practicality of that and how close he'll actually end up. As we kind of pivot to the next part of this conversation. You know, if you're going to say he's going to be around, I think for his career he's averaged 4.7 yards per carry. Last year he was at 4.3. I'm going to say 4.0 is probably about what he would need, right? Or about what he'll average moving forward. And that's safe because it's certainly not great by any means. It's a little bit of a fall off from last year. It's not what he's been in his career. And there's a chance he could average less than that, but he's not going to get many carries if you're not averaging 4 yards per. So you need 4,139 yards. That's how far behind Emmitt Smith you are. That means he would need about 1,034 carries. based on last season, that's five more years, okay? Mm-hmm. So for me, this is just not doable. It's not practical. Here's what would have to happen. A, he'd have to play, I would say, at least three, probably four more seasons. He's 35 right now. He will turn 36 before the start of next year in March, right before spring camp and everything. I think there's a better chance that he doesn't play next year than he plays four more years, so that in and of itself seems difficult. But the path would be to get to 1,000 carries. You know, if he could carry the ball 250 or even 260 times, where he's now the workhorse for a team, mm-hmm. to do it in four seasons rather than having to do it over five, that's probably the best bet, four more years as a workhorse. But I just don't envision any scenario where
right.
a team at 36 brings him in and says, you're going to get 16, 17 carries a week, maybe more, for 16 games. I don't see that as possible. So I would just say there's no way that he can pull this off.
There's a very small window for that to happen. But I agree with you. It's highly unlikely. And I don't necessarily think it's because of the body that he's talking about. Adrian Peterson is a freak of nature. Sometimes God just goes, you've been chosen. People don't come back in 8 months from reconstructed knee surgery to run for 2,100 yards. That doesn't happen in our world. This planet has gone for thousands and thousands of years without somebody being able to do that. Now, I know reconstructive surgery is more recent, but you see the point I'm trying to make. If you take an almost every athlete that's ever played any sport, put them through that injury, and then said, okay, next year, go do it, I think maybe the list is one of guys that would have run for 2,097 yards for 12 touchdowns in 2012, which is what he did. Absolutely incredible. The idea that he could be 33, 34 years old, rush for a slightly above league average yards per carry for a bad football team two straight years is remarkable. It's absolutely remarkable. So I'm not betting against his ability to kind of keep hanging around Frank Gore style and keep getting chances. I just don't think teams are going to be in the market. Maybe I'm wrong about this, to say we choose the 37-year-old running back to be our bell cow. I just don't think teams are going to do that.
What would that team philosophy be? Like, what team could or would do that? That's what I have a hard time finding. Rebuilding teams aren't doing that. A contender right. might be. But if you're a contender, you're probably not in a situation where Adrian Peterson could come in and dominate your backfield unless, like, two straight years he was Johnny on the spot with a team where somebody got hurt, or he got the call in August like he did for Washington. Like, let's say San Francisco.
That's,
they have 18
exactly.
running backs, so maybe they're a terrible example.
No, but that's
actually,
the kind
they
of team.
Are bad.
Yeah.
yeah, but a team like that, I got to think of a better one. Let's say Minnesota.
Okay.
Dalvin Cook goes down in week two next year, and, like, they need a running back, and Adrian Peterson, after rushing for 1,000 this season in Washington's out of a job, and they pull the Washington thing where they call him in August, and he comes and rushes for another 1,100 and has this year, even though I don't see it, but let's just say where he never seems to age. Mm-hmm. That's how it could happen, I guess, right?
Yeah. So, like, there are a number of teams where their starter isn't particularly special, but he's going to be a bell cow. And let's say in Houston, if Carlos Hyde goes out, or the Rams in years past with Todd Gurley slowing down, let's say he's got to go sit. Maybe that's the kind of thing. And you go, you know what? This may be the best option we have. Let's just go with it. It's not going to cost you an outrageous amount, just given kind of the running back market at this stage. But it would have to be the exact right situation. But I don't think it's going to be anybody's plan A. And that's kind of the point, is you have to have a lot of dominoes to fall multiple years in a row to have a team say, I bet on this 37, 38-year-old running back that's looking to chase the record. I just think it's an opportunity problem, you know, for him, less than it is a – I will not question that guy's physical ability or resiliency or toughness or anything. I mean, it's amazing that he's at the spot he is as the fifth leading rusher of all time.
I'm going to give him a 5% chance to do it. What about you?
Four. I mean, the exact same. I mean, I'm right then. It would take a bunch of things happening to thread the needle to him to get the opportunity. Maybe not necessarily because of physical breakdowns. It's just the opportunity, I think, is going to be so limited.
Does anybody, and you can call us at 800-636-1067, or you can tweet us at Grant H. Paulson at Funny Danny. Does anybody think he can pull this off? And what would it take for him to do it? It obviously very unlikely that it would happen here in Washington, because it would mean he'd be here for another 4 years until he was almost 40. But is there any way that Peterson could end up surpassing Emmett Smith? We're Grant and Danny. You're listening to The Fan.
You know, that's not really my ultimate goal. You know, it's one of my top goals. You know, winning a championship is the one that I'm chasing the most, you know. But, you know, obviously that's one of my goals that I set for myself, you know, when I enter into the NFL, was to be able to, you know, pass the goal. So my body is feeling good. You know, I look forward to playing, you know, a couple more years, 3 to 4 more years. Who knows? Depend on how my, you know, my body is feeling, because you know it talks to me. You know, so you know, I didn't know it was that close. You know, 4,000. That sounds a lot better than 6,000 or, you know, 5,000. So, you know, we'll see what happens. I'll put my best foot forward to reach it. I promise you that.
Adrian Peterson on Good Morning Football, the NFL Network. Peterson, a future Hall of Famer, has made 7 Pro Bowls and been an All-Pro 4 times. He won the MVP award, which running backs don't really do. He was named the AP Offensive Rookie of the Year in 07 and Player of the Year in 2012. He is 35. He wants to play a few more years, and that was him answering the question, can he catch Emmett Smith, who he is just over 4,100 rushing yards behind on the all-time list. And the answer is probably not, and we just broke it down by the numbers. It would be really, really hard to imagine him being able to do it. But the last thing we could talk about here, the last layer of this onion to peel off, Danny, might be how much football does he have left? You know, it's my belief this year that Darius Geis should be ahead of him on the depth chart when Geis is healthy. I'm not ready to completely say that about Bryce Love yet. I'm not just going to hand him that distinction. I haven't seen him play. I have seen Geis play, albeit not as often as I'd like. And Geis is outstanding, and when he has played, no disrespect to Peterson, who's a key cog for this offense over 2 years now, but Geis is a little bit better than him. And if Bryce Love is as well, then in a meritocracy and, you know, and maybe even in a rebuild, not a meritocracy where I lean toward youth, those two guys should probably tote the mail. I don't know if Peterson will play ball. I don't know if he'll be okay with that. I don't know if he'll be a good soldier, but he's going to stand next to me, a la week one next to Jay Gruden last year, and watch those two run the football a whole lot. That having been said, I think he could play in the league if he wants to for 2 or 3 more years, if he's willing to be, you know, player coach, so to speak, a mentor, a guy who doesn't necessarily have to carry the ball a lot. I just don't know if that's what he wants. There was a time a few years ago when he was asked to do that in New Orleans, and he had a real issue with it. Arizona, similarly. So that's my answer. He probably has 2 or 3 years left if he's willing to accept a lesser role. We don't know if he's willing to do that or not.
And that role wouldn't be, hey, go catch Emmett Smith, right? And you're right, it didn't go well getting, he was the third running back option in New Orleans, and that didn't work. I mean, he's a guy that needs the ball, needs getting rhythm, needs to get some contact and start, you know, bouncing off guys like a pinball machine. That's how he's always operated. And once he gets rolling, you can see some of the results. He's a powerful runner. He turns -2s into +5s. He was pretty damn good for what was the Redskins for a couple seasons in a row, doing that very thing for a bad team, moving the ball for almost 2,000 yards and double-digit touchdowns over the course of 2 seasons combined. He was pretty good for a bad offense. So it's tough to ask, hey, future Hall of Famer, hey, guy that's carried, you know, that had a 400-touch season not that long ago, could you be cool with 5 carries a game where you won't really get in a rhythm and you're watching guys that you feel like you're better than? And can you be a good clapper? Can you be Jason Garrett on the sideline? That's a tough ask. I understand that, especially when you know, want to solidify your Hall of Fame resume and end up with the most yards of anybody ever to do it. It's just I keep saying it. It's a very tiny little hole to thread the needle through if you want him to set that record. Or even, you know, catch Barry Sanders. Even, you know, catch Walter Payton. And that's not 4,000 yards away. Those are a couple thousand yards away, respectively.
We will get into Washington secondary coming up before the end of the show. We're breaking down a different position kind of in detail each day. We'll do that in the 1 o'clock hour. We're 20 minutes away from being joined by an NFL agent who represents a ton of players, including Morgan Moses here in Washington and others. Andy Ross will be with us. He's actually a local guy who lives now in Leesburg. But he'll give us insight on players deciding to opt out or not, and some of the things that went into those decisions and conversations he was having with his clients. A couple of things real quick, though, on the sports that have come back and what we're seeing. So I saw this today. Free throws in basketball are way up. 22 bubble teams have attempted 23 free throws per game. They've made about 78% of them. In the bubble, those numbers have risen to 27.9 and 79% respectively through Wednesday. So if you look at it, calls for fouls are up substantially as this bubble has gone on and with the teams that have come back. And the thing people are speculating is that more calls are being made and more fouls are being called because the refs are able to hear contact or hear kind of the slap of a wrist or something like that without the crowd. I actually buy that. But if you're watching basketball, you're noticing there are way more free throws. Do you think that's why, or is there more to it?
I think it's because guys aren't quite in shape just yet. And it's different between, you know, you can run sprints, you can run suicides and, you know, half court and back and end line and back or whatever. But getting down in a defensive stance and staying in front of guys is harder. I think that's why there's more hand checking, more guys out of position. You know, you don't quite have your sea legs. You just can't replicate that with individual drills and a couple hard practices. You know, in the middle of the fourth quarter, trying to keep Damian Lillard in front of you is hard when you're in, when everything is perfect during the season. It's doubly hard now, I think. I think that's why you're seeing more fouls. To me, fouls typically, it's not one-to-one all the time, but in the NFL, like during action fouls, not procedural penalties, but during action fouls in the NFL and then fouls in basketball are typically when guys are beat or out of position or lack leverage or are in the process of getting beat and they try to regain an advantage or try to regain something. That's when you see guys committing more violations, and I think that's what's happening more than anything else. It's hard to have that exact burst and quickness that you're used to summoning when you're in the rhythm of an NBA season. That's my guess.
That's smart. I had not thought of that, actually. But in hockey, you know, when we talk about penalty issues, you're not moving your skates. You're not moving your feet enough. You kind of get a little lazy. It does oftentimes happen when you're tired and you just kind of reach out and grab someone or throw your stick at them because you're not moving your boots. So I think that could make a lot of sense, actually. If you're not in great shape, fouls could be up. Hadn't thought of that. Everyone's just kind of saying it's easier for the officials to hear and see things right now. But that's probably true, too. One of the side effects, if we want to go to baseball, that we've seen in terms of the early results and the studying being done, is that pitchers are getting hurt at an unprecedented rate. During the first 10 days of the season, 30 pitcher arm injuries occurred. So this is not like Max Scherzer with a hamstring. This is just guys who have arm issues of any type. 2.5 times more arm injuries for pitchers in the first 10 days of the season than in any previous season's opening stretch. And we had 12 of them over those first 10 days. Mm. So is that because they ramped up the way that they did? Partially. Is it because of the starting and stopping? Perhaps. I don't know that we'll ever be able to definitively say the reason these guys are getting hurt is because of this weird season. But when it hasn't happened before and now it's happening, the first time you're doing it this way, it allows for people to speculate for sure.
Mm-hmm. I think that's, to me, it's pretty, you got a pretty clear correlation. Now, sometimes if a guy gets hurt, you go, ah, it's because of the start. Maybe he was going to get hurt anyway. You don't know. But the main reason you still have spring training, yeah, guys need to see pitches and get at bats and get used to plan and everything else, get their timing back. But it's really so pitchers can safely stretch out. I mean, that's the difference. I mean, spring training is still necessary. I've argued that the other sports don't need the same level of conditioning and get back to it because these guys maintain great conditioning year-round. And baseball players, by and large, do too, non-Pablo Sandoval division. But pitchers need the requisite amount of wear and tear on their arm, rest, then wear and tear, then rest to build up that arm immunity that you just can't fake by playing long toss in December. You just can't. You need that time, and they didn't get that time this time, and so you're seeing the injuries.
Very different stories to get to next segment. One I saw and was interested in, which is the easiest foods to make at home that are baseball comfort foods. The second is an update on Quentin Dunbar and whether or not he's going to be charged in the armed robberies that took place in Florida. So we'll get you those two things next on Grant and Danny right here on The Fan. Bad news for Giants cornerback DeAndre Baker. Good news for former Washington corner, now with Seattle, Quentin Dunbar. Welcome back, Grant and Danny, on 106.7 The Fan. Quentin Dunbar will not be charged due to insufficient evidence. However, it doesn't mean nothing happened. Breaking news out of the NFL. Giants corner DeAndre Baker, drafted in the first round last year, coming off of that first season and expected to have a long, lengthy career where he made a lot of money. He has officially been charged with 4 counts of robbery with a firearm, according to the New York Daily News. If found guilty, he could face between 10 years to life in prison. DeAndre Baker of the New York Giants. So you'll remember the story was Baker, Quentin Dunbar, and a third accomplice, and I'm not sure what ended up happening with that person. Obviously, they weren't in the NFL, so they're not being reported on by the New York Daily News. But they had gotten into a back and forth with some people over card games and had lost a bunch of money the day before. So allegedly they showed up and DeAndre Baker pulled a gun to get their money back, and they ended up taking watches where they walked around the room, and Dunbar was involved in this, allegedly. And they took watches off of people, and they knew who they were. Like, they were hanging out at this party for a while as themselves, and then they just decided to steal these things and leave. And the story was that they drove away in, like, Fast and the Furious cars, like Lamborghinis and stuff. It sounded like a really bad crime movie, honestly. Like, or a skit on Saturday Night Live. And you just hoped that it wasn't all true. Well, Dunbar's not going to be charged because of insufficient evidence, but DeAndre Baker will be. And then, I don't know how closely you've been following this, Danny, but there was, like, video, supposedly, of their attorney paying people off, allegedly, to try to get them to flip to say that this didn't happen. I mean, this whole thing has been, it would be hilarious if it wasn't real, but it's been just unbelievable since it started. It's crazy.
It is an unbelievable saga. It's the type of thing that would be rejected as a script. You know, I mean, it was like one of those laughable, you know, no real stars in it, but there was that guy from the sitcom that you kind of watched on reruns a couple times starring in it. You know, like that low budget sort of weird comedy. It's like a Let's Be Cops or something like that kind of a movie. You know what I mean? Where it's not particularly funny, it's not well done, and it gets made, and it's something that happens. But they would go, no, this is not realistic enough. This is too stupid. People won't even buy this. I mean, what a bizarre story with all the twists and turns. And this is one of the things that I love. Love is not the right word. I think you touched on it very well in your initial setup here, where insufficient charges does not mean that nothing happened. To me, it's my sort of the my Greg Hardy corollary, right? Where people love to tell me that he never got convicted of anything. No, he didn't. They couldn't find the victim. And there are lots of credit card statements and lots of money changed hands where Greg Hardy had some resources and then he didn't after an amount of time. And there's a pretty decent suspicion that it went somewhere. Doesn't mean he never did anything wrong. Just because you can't necessarily convict somebody doesn't mean that they are an angel. But yeah,
well, in fact, there were charges in this case. It's just that Dunbar himself is not going to be charged. But the guy he was with at this party is being charged with these counts of armed robbery, basically.
Yeah.
Look, he should view this one way or the other, regardless of what happened or if he knew what was going to happen or he's innocent or he was or wasn't there, as an opportunity and potentially a gift of football and life, and maybe just start making some very different decisions about who he hangs out with moving forward. I saw this on For the Win. Wanted to bounce this off you. You ready for 5 concession stand favorites baseball fans can still enjoy at home?
Go.
In-shell peanuts. That's an easy one. I just bought peanuts when I was at Wegmans the other day.
Yeah.
You got to get yourself some peanuts. Easy thing to snack on during a baseball game.
Makes so much of a mess, though, with the shells. I either want to be at Texas Roadhouse, a baseball game, and that's kind of my list. Other than that, it's just constant shell situations. But if you have good control of your discard shells, you could do that one.
But if you're eating these without your kids, I mean, you're a big boy. You can put the shells in a bucket or in a bowl or something like that. You ever eat
eating over the
seeds?
Trash can or something? Yeah, I mean, it's you got to
control. I would just get, if I'm doing shelled peanuts, I just get a little bowl and you're cracking them right over top and everything's going right into the bowl. It's not that bad. All right, how about homemade pretzels? I've never made a homemade pretzel, I got to be honest with you. But they're saying that this is a very doable thing at the house to make you feel like you're at the ballpark.
Toaster oven pretzels that come to your house and you can make them warm. But making your own? What am I, a Bavarian? No, you can't do that by yourself. No dude listening to the show, with the exception of probably like four or five guys that are actual chefs, could do that reasonably. Make a pretzel your own.
Kneading the dough and stuff.
Stop it.
Even though they're saying, you know, homemade pretzels, I think the idea of buying frozen pretzels that you can, as you say, just kind of like throw in a toaster, that's actually
microwave
a really
the super
good
pretzel.
Idea.
Yeah, do that.
Now, I have not done a hot dog. Your boy just tries to avoid the bread as best he can, and hot dogs aren't the same without it. But they're saying just throw some hot dogs on the grill. That's number three on their list of the baseball foods you can eat at home. Last time you've eaten a hot dog?
What's today? Friday? Tuesday. Tuesday.
You ate a hot dog that recently?
Yeah, we eat hot dogs all the time. Hot dogs, sausages, the whole nine yards. Keto friendly, 100%, part of our normal routine.
Breadless hot dogs?
Sometimes I'll use my diet bread from Thin Slim. Sometimes we'll go breadless, just dip it in the mustard. You know, you mix it up.
I just without the bread, for me, it's hard, man. It's really, really tough. I haven't had one in forever, but that's a ballpark food that I could do at home. Number four for them, they go nachos. Nachos number four. Now, you know how I feel. I would eat chips with meat and melted actual cheese, not liquid cheese. But I'm generally not a nacho guy. You look like a nacho guy to me, Danny. You feel like a guy that would love a nacho.
Yeah, nachos are incredible. This is one of your worst stances. Who is the guy that had that bizarre stance where he stood all the way open with the bat? Is it Tony Batista?
Tony Batista.
This is your Tony Batista stance. Nachos are incredible. They're a gift. I had nachos on Monday, in fact. Monday nachos.
Wow. Well, you've had all these this week, it feels like.
Yeah, again.
And then the last thing, now I don't consider this a baseball food at all. I don't know why this is on this list. But number five, ballpark food they say you can have at home to feel like you're still at the ballpark, they're going with ice cream, soft serve ice cream. I don't know how people are doing soft serve ice cream at home, number one. Number two, that's not really a baseball food to me. You might have it at the ballpark. I don't think that makes it a baseball food.
Just because it's available at the yard. Like, I can get French fries at the ballpark. Is that a ballpark food? Maybe it is. I don't know. We can get, like, banh mi at Nats Park now. Does that make it a ballpark food? I don't know. It depends on your definition. But, yeah, you can eat ice cream. If you eat out of a catcher's helmet, a mini catcher's helmet, now it's a baseball food. So you get me a mini catcher's helmet, and I'll put my Enlightened brand ice cream in there, which I had Thursday. Wednesday. Then, yeah.
You go Enlightened over Halo Top?
Yes. Halo Top has more sugar, more carbohydrates per serving than the Enlightened.
Interesting. I'll have to give Enlightened a look. Andy Ross is an NFL agent, represents players here in D.C. and all over the league. Let's discuss with him the conversations that were ongoing and players were deciding whether or not they were opt out. We'll do that next one.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.